The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover. Yes, indeed, we are. I am Jeff, X-Force 11.
And I'm John, a.k.a. The Substitute.
And welcome to Gotham Undercover, episode 61.
Yeah, guys are getting to be senior citizens. Love it. We are without our Scarlet Knight, and we want to send her the very best through the internet that we possibly can. Thoughts and everything good sent her way. So if you are so inclined, take a moment to send a little positive energy, prayers, thoughts, anything you can for our missing Karen. So hopefully she will be back on the mic next week.
That's right.
And we are part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. You can find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for facebook.com/groups/Gotham Undercover. Jeff, what are we talking about?
That's right. We're talking about these delicate and dark obsessions. And this was the directorial debut of Ben McKenzie, a.k.a. Jim Gordon. And I must say, he did a pretty good job this week.
He did. I really like some of the choices he made. And, you know, this show is always beautiful. I mean, that's one of the signature marks of this show. But he really kept that quality up. I thought particularly wherever Bruce is, you know, the maze inside, you know, everything just was beautifully done.
Yeah, I appreciate how that was done. I also appreciated the blog post cover image is Jim standing on top of the hill there in the graveyard looking out at Gotham. Mm-hmm. And that was a really cool choice to do cinematography wise. And so, yeah, I just appreciated his work and his ability for this first time to work with the cast and bring those things out. And it really helps that they had a great writer. They got Robert Hull, who's a producer and writer on Gotham, and he's done work on Once Upon a Time and Alcatraz, but he's a real stable part of Gotham. And so having him there to kind of come alongside Ben and join him in that and help him flesh out that vision was really cool to see.
Yeah. And I mean, Ben really took on a major role in this episode, too. I mean, I know you follow The Flash like I do, and we just had Tom Cavanaugh direct an episode, the one that was on last week, and didn't feature him much at all. And so, but Ben was a major part of this episode as Jim and the director. So he took on the yeoman's woad there.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I mean, that's always challenging for your first kind of debut to know that the one you're directing is the one that features you so heavy. So, but yeah, you did a really good job. But let's talk about our ratings. What did you give it, John?
Well, I found freaks to be the key word of this episode. Had I watched it a third time, I think I just would have, you know, gone for the number of count of the word freaks. But but I gave this episode 8.5 freaks.
And I gave it 8 bodies in Ivy's greenhouse. Now, that's not how many bodies she has in her greenhouse, but
well, we don't know.
Well,
you know,
that's true.
It could be something else under those plants. So.
Yes, indeed. Well, as far as story titles, since we didn't have the Scarlet Cougar this week, I kind of pulled mine from the blog post. And, you know, with the blog post, you kind of got to work, you do a keyword and that kind of stuff. So we have the A story being is Delicate Family Matters, talking about Jim and Frank. The B story, not so delicate Ivy, talking about Ivy and Penguin, and then Delicate Destiny talking about Bruce. And so let's kick it off talking about Ivy and Penguin. And I really appreciate that Ivy is being played for what she is, a young person in an adult body. That's very interesting to play off that kind of mentality alongside the Penguin, who is an adult, but he still has, you know, some childlike qualities and some naivete and things like that. So it's interesting to see the two of them together in this episode.
Right. I don't know if you found this to be true, but as I was watching it, especially through the first time, Ivy struck me that, I don't know if backwards is the right word, but it's like her character, at least in my mind, sort of took a step back in terms of her emotional maturity. I'm remembering the last time that we really engaged with her, and she was, you know, conning the guy out of the jewel, mm-hmm. and they had her and Selena and Bruce together. And it seemed to me that Ivy had, you know, sort of the same emotional maturity level as Bruce and Selena, or at least she could share the room without seeming like a child. And in this one, to me, it seems like they wanted to make an extra point of that, so they regressed her a little bit. I don't know. Am I right on that? What do you think?
Now going back and thinking about it, I see what you're saying there. I think it may be the people that she's around, because she's around, when she was around Bruce and Selena, she's seeing those two really as equals.
Right.
Because she's been with them and who she was. And here she's around these adults and she's a little more timid and playing it off. And it just could be her dealing with being who she is and trying to find her place and her spot. So, you know, I just feel like she is someone really now that she's got ideas and she's got wants and needs and she's trying to express those, but she really hasn't found her course yet. She's kind of playing off of others, where she needs Penguin to appreciate her and say please and things like that. So I don't know if that's intentional in the writing or with what they were trying to do in this episode or what, but that's kind of how I saw it. But yeah, not until you mentioned it did I really consider how she played in that previous episode. So yeah, definitely.
Well, and but that being said, I adored Ivy this episode. I mean, the way that she was portrayed, the way that she had the playfulness about her, and she had the almost, you know, childlike innocence while at the same time carrying out all these evil criminal things. But I loved the, when Penguin caught on to what she was doing with the perfume, and she was just like, yeah, give him the gun and do this and do that. And I mean, her shouting, I think was one of my favorite parts of this episode. Why are you in such a rush? You know, it was fantastic. Really appreciated Ivy. Probably the most I have in the whole series.
Yeah.
And out of this episode. So
yeah, I enjoyed it too. And just seeing the two of them interplay back and forth was a lot of fun. And it's going to be exciting to see where they take this going forward. I really appreciate that the Penguin is learning, and he learned in this episode from Ivy. That he's got to, if there's people with him, he's got to give them some sort of respect and some sort of, being there for them and realizing that he has needs, that he can't do it on his own. And he's really faced that when he's calling for Gabe And she brings Gabe, but things don't go as planned. And, you know, it's really telling when Ivy uses that, basically that truth-telling powder there, and the Penguin really hears that they fear him but never respected him, and all they saw him was that, you know, that, you know, guy who was a lackey with an umbrella. And just to hear himself be called a freak, and then on compounded, you know, and he's called Ivy a freak earlier, and just realizing that he is in need, he doesn't have this power like he thought he did, and control like he thought he did. So he's looking at that kind of that interplay of, okay, I've called this woman a freak, and then here's this guy who's called me a freak, and she's like, okay, well, you need an army. Why not get an army of freaks? And, you know, I really appreciated kind of him growing in that way, and she being used in that way to kind of help him grow up as that mirror of what other people see him as what she, you know, he saw her as. So I really like that.
Yeah, I love the way you put that. When he, it was a very powerful moment when he looks at Ivy and just says, "Oh, you're being serious. Like, mm-hmm. like you really think this is a friendship?" And he doesn't really know how to just be an equal with somebody. He either has to be in the position of power.
Mm-hmm.
Or the position of working up under them. Like that's the only kinds of relationships, either up or down, that he really knows how to be. Even as much as his professed love for Ed, he still wanted to be in that position of making things happen.
Right.
And so, yeah, this was a really neat episode, just like you were saying, of him to develop and see that, okay, this doesn't have to be, you know, me either up or down. This can be, you know, somewhat of an equal of a friendship, and that's an okay way to act too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed it, and like I said, I like the interplay between the two of them, and I'm looking forward to seeing that going forward, in his building that army and seeing how they play off of each other. You know, I'm kind of curious, we got some cool internal and external shots on that house,
mm-hmm.
and Ivy mentioned that she found it abandoned,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I'm just curious, because they made a big deal kind of to me about showing it, showing the inside, showing it out. It's kind of her spot, but I'm wondering if it has like a deeper meaning that's going to play out, or if that was just me, because I'm thinking, okay, whose house might be abandoned that we might see again? And I'm thinking, was it Hugo's house? You know, was it somebody else's house that we're going to see come back? You know, I'm just curious, but I think they did a really good job once again with the cinematography, showing the outside was this white and, you know, it was kind of white and snowy out there, and white exterior of the house. And then here inside is all these tropical flowers and, you know, kind of contrasting, looking at the people. They may look one way on the inside and different on the outside. So it was really cool. Once again, I liked a lot of the use of cinematography in this episode. So it was really cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said.
All right. Well, you want to move on to Bruce's storyline.
Yeah.
So, okay. So. Yeah, it took me a little while because I was looking at the shaman, and mm-hmm. I'm like, I know the actor, but things are going too fast. I can't take time to look it up. And it's Raymond J. Berry, and I know him because he played in Justified.
Okay.
He played Raylan's dad, Arlo. And so I'm like, oh, that's where I know him from. So This was a really interesting storyline. We talked a little last week about, in some of the feedback and different things, about, okay, they seem to be jumping ahead in things and ideas that seem to happen to Bruce later on in life. But I just really found it interesting, you know, once again, the telling of the story of, you know, Bruce is trying to escape and he's running around in circles. He can't get away from this guy. The guy is completely in control and he's kind of given him that whole spiel of, you know, life's a maze and you got to realize where you are in it. And, you know, those type of things, and
yeah,
trying to break through to Bruce, really getting him to think more strongly about things, to think, okay, you know, there's somebody in your place. They're not looking for you now, and not giving him all the answers. I like that the shaman character took him into his vision, you know, his past memories twice,
right,
to kind of get him to realize the point of things, that he is living, he has never left that memory, really, mm-hmm, and he's got to move beyond it if he wants to move forward. And yeah, so I like the beats in the story. It's just kind of unusual seeing it maybe this early in the Bruce Wayne mythos. What do you think about mm-hmm that?
No, totally. And having read the prequel novel, the mm-hmm Dawn of Darkness, while we were in the hiatus, this bringing us back to this memory was just that much more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down a couple of things that the shaman of the needles, as I put him, I wrote down a couple of things that he said. The first of all being that if Bruce is to become a symbol against fear, then Gotham can be reborn. Mm. And, you know, I thought about this, and, you know, when we think about the Dark Knight, you know, one of the things that makes him effective is that he is a symbol of fear to those people who would be criminals, who would, you know, go for this, you know, that mm-hmm line of thinking and all that. So, interesting way to put it. I don't know that I had really, you know, to me, he's always been a symbol of fear, not against fear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I, that took me aback, but as I sat and thought about it, it was like, well, that makes sense. That, you know, to the good people of Gotham, he would be a symbol against the fear of everything that's going on, all the craziness that's going on around them. But, mm-hmm, but yeah, I think as a lifelong Batman lover, it's like, well, he's always been a symbol of fear for these people. So I don't know. Yeah. The other thing I wrote down was that your pain blocks you from who Gotham needs you to become. And again, having lived with this character as long as I have, it seems to me that, at least in my mind, his motivation has always been this moment of pain.
Mm.
And so, I mean, there's part of me that wants to tell the needle guy that look, he doesn't need to unblock this pain. He needs this pain to motivate him to go on to be who he needs to be. And I don't know if there's going to be a compromise of that, or if there's, or where they intend to go with this. And maybe I'm just making too big of a deal of it, but
I
kind of disagreed with the advice that this guy was giving him.
Yeah. And that's my question. I was like, who is he?
Yeah.
How did Bruce get in his possession? Mm-hmm. He says that the owls are just tools.
Yeah.
And, you know, from one sense, I can see that way, because if you look at your experiences in life and you think of those experiences, those hard times and those easy times, as tools that help shape who you are, well, that's the case.
Yep.
But, you know, what is his agenda? I mean, I don't think that the court is going to give Bruce to somebody who they don't, you know, they wouldn't want to have him. So, right. We just still have a lot of questions. But, and while I agree with you, too, about the, okay, maybe this whole symbol thing is maybe their plan and not what it's going to turn out to be. And so that's why we see the difference. But, yeah, I was a little thrown off that way. But on the other side, I looked at the fact where he's telling Bruce that I can help you remember, you know, you can remember every detail of your memories. Mm-hmm. And you thinking about the Batman character being this detective and being able to really look at things and analyze things and use that tool of how useful that would be to really, it takes me to back to the BBC version of Sherlock with Sherlock and his mind palace, where he can go in there and he can pull through the memories and facts and figures and then come back. And so if you're putting that in the greatest detective there with Batman, I can see how helpful that would be, and some of this training will be to him. And so that's, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see, because we don't know any of the context of him. We don't know any of the motivation of why he says he wants to to Bruce to be this symbol of hope for a new birth. But is that the owl's new birth of Gotham after they wiped everything out like they have in the past?
Let me stop you for just a second, and let me kind of compare notes with you in terms of what you think the hierarchy is going on here, because the shaman says that the court is a tool.
Mm-hmm.
So that says to me, okay, the shaman and okay, I'm just gonna presume that we're talking about he's maybe part of the League of Assassins, because we know that, you know, Ra's al Ghul, not Ra'sh, Karen, not Ra'sh, that Ra's al Ghul is coming to the series. So I'm just going to assume that Needle Shaman is part of the League of Assassins, and that they are using the court as their cleansing mechanism, if you will. I mean, you can pull in a little Batman Begins here and say that, okay, they've, you know, we get the thing about how they've cleansed Gotham twice already, and now with, you know, this weapon's coming, and, you know, that kind of a thing. So is that what you take it to mean, that, okay, that the shaman and whoever he's a part of is using the court to, you know, put out this whole thing of Gotham? And then I've got a follow-up question about what is it about Gotham that all of these big, huge worldly powers, why do they care?
So question one. Yeah, I can definitely see that, because in the Owl storyline, there is a talk of someone over them.
Mm-hmm.
And what I could kind of see it is this. Okay, the League is around the world. It's global, and it's got people from all over, and they do these things like we've seen in the movies where they're cleansing and causing upheaval and changes all throughout history.
Yeah.
But what I could see is in each one of those major cities, there is a group that's not necessarily League trained, but is affiliated with the League. So the League has said, okay, this is our vision, and you're here, and we want to empower you. We're going to give you the resources to do this, because you have the same vision as us. So I can see it as like they're, you know, the Owls is a franchise where they're not getting the full the full League training, but they're like they're authorized to do their work there. That's
they're a subcommittee.
Yeah. So that's how I could kind of see it. And so you know, you've got Roz, you know, coming in and maybe saying, okay, you've messed things up, I'm going to take control, or you need a little more firm leadership, so I'm coming in to kind of oversee what's going on. So, yeah, and where the shaman plays in between, I don't know. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. And to your second question, I think the reason why people are so concerned with Gotham is because there is something in Gotham throughout the years that just sets itself up to say, we're not going to be moved. We're not going to be pushed over as easily as maybe other cities do, you know, have been. We're stronger. We're fighters. We've got that spirit about us that you're going to beat us down, but you're not going to break us. So I kind of see it maybe as something like that, whereas some cities, they may have come in and they did this wipe and reboot of the city, and things changed. And because that city was different, they only had to do that once. Whereas Gotham, they may have done it, but it's not going to hold for too long. There's got to be something else that happens. So I think it's just something about the nature of Gotham. And you kind of get that played out with Batman, where you may beat him down, you may get ahead of him or get an advantage over him, but he's going to rise back up. And so I kind of maybe see that, you know, mirrored there.
I like the way you put that. Very nice.
So, yeah, it's going to be interesting because we have seen Bruce get this physical training from Alfred, and right. I've enjoyed that, and I know we're going to get to see more of that, but this is more of the mental and using your mind, sharpening your mind, and observing things more carefully. And so it's just another layer of the aspect, and I think whatever the outcome of it, Bruce is going to take that piece and use that and adapt it, and, you know, to make him who he is as Batman. He's going to use the challenges that he goes through to use it. And so regardless of where this storyline goes and how far he's captive, I think he's going to be able to use it in some way.
No, I agree. The first time that, you know, we see the needle being used, you can tell his whole, you know, the eyes change and the power surges through his mind. You can tell he's being taken over.
Right.
And I wonder if we will, you know, progress to the point where he's able to just do this, you know, on his own.
Yeah. And the movement there of the first time, he's just that that passive observer. He's still living in that moment. And then the second time, he's fighting against it. And as soon as he begins to fight against the memory, that's when, you know, the memory ceases and he starts to fight the shaman. So yeah. I really, you know, once again, that's the shaman's teaching method, but it's nice to see. Yeah, we've gotten a little bit of movement of Bruce being different, realizing that he is not the same boy that happened to then, and he's different now. So yeah, it was really interesting to see.
All right. So anything else that you got out of Bruce's storyline there?
No, not right offhand. I think, you know, I'm just excited to see where this goes in upcoming episodes. So
yeah.
All right, on to family matters here. I really appreciate the writers. I said this in the blog post because you look at Frank, and Karen and I talked about last week of what's his motivation. Is he just trying to fool Jim, and he's being used by the court, and we kind of see that turned on its ear this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just, and you know, and it, once again, it could be the writers. They could do a turnabout where Frank sacrificed himself for the court's purpose, but that would just be really surprising for me. But here we have, like, okay, he's pulling the wool over on Jim's eyes. He's just getting him to join so that he can do the owls. And it was just really good. I really appreciate the writers of being that smart and being able to do those twists and turns.
Well, and in my mind, to leave it completely open-ended, because I remember I remember specifically you and Karen talking about that, you know, you both came to the conclusion that, no, Frank's not a good guy. And you could, from this week, you could make the argument. You could make a ton of arguments that he is, in fact, a good guy. But you also can't, it's not 100%. And you can't walk away saying, oh, yeah, he redeemed himself. You can't do that. And yes, he pulled the trigger. And, you know, I think ultimately in the end, he didn't see another way out. And it was either, just like he said, you know, he's not going to stop until one of us is dead. And so, was it an act of honor? You know, not that I believe suicide is, but, you know, is that what he was going for? Or was it what he thought was a self-sacrificial thing so that Jim could move forward and, you know, who knows, maybe try and take down the owls. It was really hard to tell because he would be all things to all people.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, we walk away from Frank going, we may never know, you know, what his motivations were, what his roles were truly in all of this. So,
yeah, it was very interesting to see the hesitation where they're voting to basically reboot the city and do it. And
yeah,
he's gauging things and putting down the feather and coming out once Jim basically confronts him after talking to Falcone, saying, you had my dad murdered using the mob, and but him being smart and getting out of that but basically saying, yeah, I did it, but it's a complicated character. And that's one of those things. I appreciate, James being able to play that character so well. And, as an actor, and then the writing of them writing for him as a character and then dealing with everything that he has to go through. James Remar just did a great job at that.
Yes.
And I enjoyed the plot line so much because Jim, we're learning about the court as Jim is learning about it. And his conversation with Falcone that everybody works for the owls. It's just some of us cooperate and
they know it. Yeah.
Right. And know about it. And him getting this bigger picture. So he's getting confirmation from somebody other than his uncle about what they're about. And we see how intense they are. And you see Jim stepping up to the plate of, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm gonna get in there. I'm going to continue what my dad started, and I'm going to get him justice. But in order to do that, I've got to step onto the court. And it's gonna be interesting to see that going forward. What is the court's plan for the owls? I mean, the Court of Owls planned for Jim. How's he going to work in that? Because obviously he's brand new. They're not going to trust him all that much. How long is that going to go about? It's just, I really appreciated just this whole storyline of looking at motivation and how do I get justice? How do I honor family from Frank's point of view of he's trying to protect his nephew. He's trying to honor what his brother was trying to do and bring down the court and having to make the hard choices there. So I really liked that storyline and how complicated it is. And something that, you know, we've had hints of this, you know, the court coming along and even Jim's past and Jim's dad, because we know Falcone had a relationship with Jim's dad. We've seen those hints, but really to come into the latter half of this season with this strong storyline and trust your audience enough to really let them deal with it, and where it's not a just a broad action, it's one of those storylines that makes you think, I just really appreciated it.
Yeah. If I may, let me go down a little bit of a tangent.
Sure.
Because we had a scene with Lee in this episode and in the graveyard. And, you know, for a while I was in a position, in fact, I think the last episode that you and I were on together was the one where, Jim killed Mario right before Christmas. And, you know, we've had a little bit of interaction with Lee, you know, ever since. And let me just say, you know, having never been in this kind of situation, I know it's probably difficult to write for, but I came away from this week with Lee. I'm really starting to get irritated with where she is coming from. You know, one of the folks that I really respect in terms of, you know, relationships and marriages and how people interact with each other. You know, one of the key things that they're good about saying is that, okay, when you're, you know, really angry with your spouse or your partner, or, you know, whatever it is, when you are up to your ears in it, when you come back and think in your mind, okay, what is their motivation, right? Do they overall have intentions for me that are good, or do they have overall intentions for me that are bad? Okay. So when you're talking about, from Lee's perspective, someone that she was, you know, setting up house with, and they were, you know, on track to get married, and, you know, so on and so forth, I don't really understand the level of hatred and grudge that are still being carried out here. It's like, okay, if knowing, and two, she went to him the night of the rehearsal dinner. Am I remembering that right? She went to him to get closure on this, and maybe even to give him a chance to say, you don't need to do this. We could still work this out, you know, so on and so forth. She went there with that hope.
Mm-hmm.
And yet now she looks at him and says, how do you do that? Of just, you know, be okay with this swath of destruction and, you know, devastation that you leave behind. And I wanted to slap her. I hate that she's kind of turned into this character for me, but it's just like, okay, why has nobody asked the question? Because I know Jim will never just come out and say, you know what? He was, you know, Mario was not right and he was sick and he had a knife and he was going to kill you, but the knife's in the river and you know, he's not going to go through all that. He's going to take the honorable way and let her just rail all over him and walk away. But why on earth, being as smart as she is, why would she not ask the question, why did you do that? You know?
Yeah. She knows. I mean, we've seen her talk with Barnes. So yeah. She knows that there's no way that he could come back from that. But, you know, I don't know. The grief there, the anger, and we know that time has passed. You know, that's a little iffy, you know, of how much time has passed there. And I just don't know. I think she had her reservations about Jim, but she knew who he was.
Yes.
And she was in there for him, but she was broken. I mean, I think she has, we've got to realize that this woman was pregnant with his child, lost the baby, was betrayed, all that she's gone through, yeah, it's frustrating at times for me as well, because I'm like, I want to see some more of that strong Lee come back to, I know she can't be exactly the same, but to see some of that strength come back and really get beyond some of the bitterness. But if I'm thinking about what she's gone through, and I can, not to say that it's completely justified, I can see that she's not been in a place stable enough to process. And, yeah, you know, yeah, she's got Falcone around her who is not happy with Jim either, and feeding some of that frustration. I just don't think she doesn't have for her that emotional sounding board that Jim has with Harvey to be able to talk things out. Mm-hmm. She does not have that person that she can go to. And so, while I see that frustration and I'm frustrated too, I can kind of see some motivation for it too. I just hope that they can move her forward and let her be a strong character that may not have the best relationship with Jim, but at least has a working relationship where she appreciates what he tried to do for her. So,
yeah, you're right. And I mean, if they, my thing is, if they keep her in this bitter, ugly place, I don't know how much that is good for the character of the show at this point. It's like, okay, we need to get this resolved one way or another. So
yeah, I agree. And I think it's hard because we need some, Gotham is a challenging place. It's a dark place, and mm-hmm. we don't have any really 100% happy, shiny people like we do on some of the other DC shows. You've got all those layers, but it would be so nice to have, once again, the title of this half is Heroes Rise, to have some characters rise that would shine and be positive in the midst of this darkness. So I'm hoping that they give her some movement, because I appreciate her as an actress.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah. Love Marina, yeah.
And I want to see a little more brightness around things, a little, not in a naive way, but a way that is positive and moving forward. So we'll hopefully we can see that.
Yeah. Well, and maybe, now that we're talking about it out loud, maybe this is one of these dark obsessions that the title is referring to.
Could be.
That, just this place of pain is what's driving her, and she doesn't quite know how to be any other way at this point. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either, because, I mean, she's a character that she's come back to the GCPD because she doesn't, I mean, she's really trying to find her footing of who she is.
Yeah,
and yeah. And we want to see a strong character. So yeah, hopefully we can see her rise out of this.
Yep. So, all right, a couple other mentions before we dive into the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
loved Harvey this week and explaining the Irish curse. That there's no way this guy could have been drinking, but a great character moment for him, because of course he would know this. So, but you're right. I love him as a sounding board, and he really investing himself right off the bat with Jim's, story about, what happened to his father. Again, talk about dark obsessions, mm-hmm. but with him just diving right in there. Okay. Tell me what you got. What do you need? If we're going to go after your father's killer, let's get it done, kind of a thing. Love that.
Mm-hmm.
Also loved revisiting Barbara and Tabs, and you know, getting them in on the action this week. And
yeah, Queen Barbara,
yeah,
on Barbara her queen on her throne, and I'm like, yeah. Wow. And them, I that was wild. Where Harvey, you know, phones a friend because Jim can't go down to the docks and the GCPD can't go down the docks. Let's phone a friend. And them getting the information of basically the owls have had this, you know, off the books pier for years and years and years, and the mob just let it pass because basically they knew better.
Don't mess with that.
And but yeah. They finally get the answer out of there, and the weapon has been delivered, and he's pointing at this box over there that's got the Indian Hill logo on it.
Yeah, like who makes a logo for Indian Hill, right?
Yeah, but I mean, what? But my question is, so why was it shipped in if Indian Hill was in town?
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, are there other Indian Hills? Were there? I mean, was it something that was in Indian Hill that got shipped off and then got shipped? I just don't know. It just brings up all these questions of what is this weapon and how is it going to be used? And but wow, the Talon coming in. Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, just showing you how rough they are and how powerful they are. It's like,
oh my
ooh.
Goodness. And what a squeaky episode this was. I mean, just everywhere you turned around, it was quick. It was like, ah. still baffles me that this is on at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, you're looking Supergirl, yeah. Gotham. One of these things is not like the other one. Oh man,
goodness, there was blood flying everywhere. So, all right, anything else you got?
No. So let's kick it off here. And I gotta do.
Oh, love it. Yeah, thank you.
So, we are a little feedback light this week with Chris. I talked with him, and he had some difficulties this week, had some challenges in watching because of some other stuff going on. So, he didn't get to watch and get us his feedback this week. But we do have two pieces of feedback. And I'm going to take the first one. Todd left us a Facebook message, and he said, so it was a pretty cool ep. Do we know why the Penguin's immune to Ivy's perfume? Because I think I missed something. So I'm going to stop there. I think it's got to be directly like blown and inhaled order for it to take effect. It's not mass. So, you know, I think that's how it went that way. So
she drew both of those guys in really close.
Right.
To,
right.
Yeah. She's, to get the effect.
Yep. Yeah. She's still learning those ways. So he continues, I enjoyed last night. And he says, was that Obsidian from Legends of Tomorrow? Lance Hendrickson, the main guy, I'm guessing Ra's al Ghul, and then the Parbat with Bruce's mind warp thing. So, no, not Lance Hendrickson, as we said, Raymond Berry, and it wasn't Ra's al Ghul either. This is the shaman, so yeah, so the Ra's is coming. So, so yeah, thanks, Todd. We appreciate you leaving the feedback there on the Facebook group, and thanks for giving us that feedback.
Yeah. All right, so that leaves me. Reading from the Green Butterfly, Justina. Mm-hmm. Good evening, Gotham. This is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Butterfly emoji. Penguin emoji. Better watch out. He better be nice to Ivy. She saved him, but I think she could use her plants, leafy plant emoji, to kill him easily, as Barbara is going to not be happy to see him either. The show is still giving me Alice in Wonderland vibes with Bruce in those endless hallways that look, eyes emoji, the same as one big maze. Where is he anyway? It looks like Nanda Parbat. Does anyone know he's missing yet? Is anyone looking for young Master Bruce? Jim is distracted by the Court of Owls, owls emoji, Uncle Frank, and the fact that his dad's death is not what it seems. I know this part of the season is called Heroes Rise, but I am not seeing any heroes yet. Still seems like a mad city to me. I gotta fly, Gotham. Find some help, but before time runs out for our Gotham. Green butterfly out. Smile blob emoji. Green butterfly emoji.
Yeah.
Thank you, Justina.
Yeah.
I they brought this up. Is anyone looking for Bruce? No, because Five is there, and, you know, our Bruce is pretty sure that Alfred's going to figure it out. And even the shaman says, yeah, maybe, but hopefully by that time we'll be where we need to be. Right. So we'll see how that comes together here in the next few episodes, I'm sure.
Indeed. So, yeah, and she knows Karen likes the emojis, so she puts them in there.
That's right. I had to keep up the tradition.
Oh, yeah, indeed. So, okay. So you're going to hear something special. You're going to hear pre-recorded, John. So hang on one second.
To get your feedback in like these good folks, please get it to us by Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. You can call us at 304-837-2278. Or you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can leave a text file, you can attach an audio file, you can use the provided SpeakPipe widget, or you can simply email us at feedback@goldenspiralmedia.com. Follow the show on Twitter at GothamGSM. And to subscribe or leave your 5-star reviews for this or any other Golden Spiral Media podcast, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple.
And
now, here are your hosts, Karen and Jeff.
I forgot that last little bit was in there. But yeah, thanks, John. We said how much we liked him reading, John reading the feedback info in the Gotham Extras. And so you were so gracious and recorded one for Gotham Undercover and one for Made of Steel. So thanks so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that's got to happen each time. And you may as well, you know, not take your energy and effort, just plug and play.
So. Definitely. So we have got some news. So
news.
So next week, Mr. Freeze, Nathan Darrow, and Firefly, Camila Perez, return. So, you know, we got a little bit of hint of that when Ivy was talking about getting some of the Indian Hill freaks. And so the description is as follows. Some of Gotham's most unhinged villains band together while the Riddler continues his conquest of the city. Gordon is on a search for answers, and all roads keep leading back to the Court of Owls. Meanwhile, as Alfred begins to notice a change in Bruce, Bruce too confides in Selene in the all-new Heroes Rise, The Primal Riddle. And so that's next Monday at 9. And I've got the promo images up on our Facebook page, and in the blog post you'll find the trailer there. And I've got promo images up for that episode and the following episode, Light the Wick. No promo images yet for the episode after that, but it is up there. The description is up there. And so you'll be able to see that. And we did get some news here. TV Line is reporting, and I'm also seeing it on IMDb, that the season finale on June 5th, will be 2 hours long, composed of episodes 21 and 22. So it looks like that. I don't know if we were slated to get 22 episodes, and I don't know if they decided early on to put them together as a 2-hour finale because of how the season was running and us going into June, or if they film those two episodes and are putting them back to back, as you know, you've got one episode and here's the other episode. But I've got to talk with Karen on how we're going to cover those. you know, if we're going to cover one episode one week and do the other episode the next week, we'll just have to determine that. But it's kind of exciting that they give us a 2-hour finale, since we are, you know, ending up in June, that they kind of give us that.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully it will be, and I imagine by that point in the season it would be, you know, the penultimate and the finale would be so closely tied that it makes sense to do it as one long story. So
yeah, you know, it's interesting. I know some folks don't like spoilers, and so with the images and the descriptions, you know, I'm going to say if you are not interested in knowing spoilers, you may want to hold off on that. But looking at the images and some of the descriptions for the upcoming episodes, it looks very interesting. I think we've got a really good run of episodes ahead of us, and I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. Well, if Penguin is able to get this, you know, this army of freaks together, this could be quite a fun adventure in seeing how they bring all that together, because, you know, all of these guys and gals have their own agendas and their own you know, ways of doing things, and for him to be able to corral all this and come up with this, you know, kind of Sinister Six or whatever you want to call it.
Wrong universe.
I know, right? Sorry, Marvel. Sorry, demerit. But you know, I mean, I think that'll be quite fascinating just to figure out the management techniques of, of bringing all this together. So yeah. Respect and fear, like he says. So.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well,
all right. Well, Jeff, I appreciate you having me on as always. Always happy to step in, but we look forward to Karen's very swift return. And so I will head out by just letting you know, Jeff, that I tend to give apocalyptic warnings of mass destruction the benefit of the doubt.
Oh my goodness, I don't even have a line from the you just threw me off. You're so good now with Triple Cast that you've got to do those fun right. lines at the end. Oh well, thanks again for coming. And yeah, if you do want to hear John, he and Corey are just getting ready to start a new triple coming up. You want to tell folks about that?
Absolutely. Our triple for the month of May is going to be 70s dystopian futures. And we are taking a look this week at THX 1138. Next week will be Death Race 2000. And our third week will be on Logan's Run. So if this sounds like something that's up your alley, come on over and join us at www.goldenspiralmedia.com/triplecast and get in on those and send us your feedback on these. If these movies are something that you're into, we would love to have a larger discussion with you guys.
Oh, yes, indeed. All right, folks, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.